They told us that we have to use the pointer here. You see, is it working? Okay, great. I like to walk around when I talk, and I'm not going to be able to. So what I'd like to talk to you about today is auxin metabolic relationships in the diploid strawberry, Fragaria vesca. And we've been interested in auxin for a long time, and the we in this is a collaboration between my lab at Beltsville and the lab of Jerry Cohen at Minnesota. And the former and present graduate students in the lab, Jen Tang and Molly Tillman, have done the analyses in this work, and Peng Yu developed the metabolic methods. Okay. So just to orient you to the strawberry fruit, this is a slide of the of a fully developed unopened bud from which I've taken the sepals and the bracts away so that and the petals so that you can see the stamens and the fully developed pistils. On the other side is a cross-sectional drawing showing you that the pistils are sitting on the outside of the stem tip here, which we call the receptacle. And it's the receptacle in this is a much younger bud cross-section, but it's this receptacle that is going to develop into the fleshy part of the of what we call the strawberry fruit. It's the true fruit of the strawberry are these achenes, these hard, dry fruits that sit on the outside of the receptacle. So for many years, these experiments that are shown here were published in 1950, which is which means they were done before most of us were born, show that auxin is required for growth of the receptacle after fertilization. So if you look at these top images, you can see that if you fertilize a single pistil, you get only the flesh developing underneath that fertilized pistil. And if you do three, then you see three knobs of developing fruit. If you remove all of the achenes, you don't get enlargement or you don't get very much enlargement. Whereas here's the control where the achenes were all fertilized. If you take the fruit where you've removed the achenes and you replace, what he did was replace the achenes with paste, lanolin paste that had auxin in it, you now see enlargement of the receptacle. So from these experiments actually established strawberry as sort of a model system for looking at auxin-regulated growth. So we've been interested for a long time in how IAA, the free IAA that's in the cell, is regulated, how the amounts are regulated. And we know that the free IAA, whoops, this is really sensitive. The free IAA here in the middle can disappear, can go away when the responses are affected. But we also know that there are metabolic pathways that are important for IAA levels. Boy, I think I'm going to use my pointer. So IAA levels are affected by biosynthesis and by catabolism and by conjugate formation and hydrolysis. All of these metabolic processes are affected by environment and development and the stresses that plants find themselves under. And it's important to remember that all of these responses that auxin brings about in themselves go back and feedback on to how auxin is metabolized in the cell. So today I'm going to focus on the hydrolysis of conjugates. We know that conjugates are made in plants by these enzymes that are encoded by GH3 or Gretchen-Hagen 3 genes, and that they are hydrolyzed by a bunch of enzymes, hydrolases, that are named after the mutants in Arabidopsis from which they were identified. So they have funny names like IAA leucine resistant or IAA alanine resistant. So for a long time, we knew that strawberry fruit are capable of synthesizing conjugates. We also know that there's a protein in strawberry fruit, in both the achenes and the receptacle, that has IAA conjugated to it. But what we didn't know at all were what were the small amide conjugates that are present in the strawberry fruit. So we just needed to know what was there. And for this, we also knew that there were genes encoding conjugate formation. This is in the literature. And you can see that in the developing achene, these enzymes, these genes, the enzymes encoding these conjugate-forming enzymes are upregulated. And likewise, there are some of them that are upregulated in the developing receptacle. So to look at the amide conjugates that are actually formed by these genes, we actually, Pong developed a very simple, fast extraction method where you just grind up the sample, you centrifuge, you dilute it, and you shoot into the mass spec. So what allows us to do the analyses are the high-resolution mass spec that we have. It's a hybrid mass spec with a quadrupole and an Orbitrap, and it's this that allows us, the Orbitrap, the selectivity of the Orbitrap allows us to select for these particular ions in a large group of ions. So what we discovered was that achenes have IAA aspartate and IAA glutamate, as seen here. And you can see here the signature quinolinium ion out to four places of selectivity. So we then wanted to know whether all Fragaria species have these same conjugates and whether they are present in the same ratio, one to the other, in all of the species and varieties of Fragaria. So if you look at the diploids, there's various inbred lines here as well as different species, and you can see that there's quite a bit of variability in the ratio of these two conjugates, but these two are found in all of them. Whereas if you compare to the two octoploid progenitors of the commercial strawberry, you can see that there's a much higher ratio of IAA aspartate to IAA glutamate. If you now look at the commercial strawberry, which is derived from these two progenitors, you see that the levels of the ratio of IAA aspartate to IAA glutamate looks more like one of the diploids. And we didn't know what this meant, but we have a clue as to what this is actually meaning, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. So the question then becomes, are these conjugates actually used by the germinating seed for growth? So to do this, we synthesized mass-labeled IAA aspartate and IAA glutamate, and actually Jerry Cohen made these, and he's sitting right there. And then we incorporated those into the medium on which we put just germinating aseptic seeds. So having the inbred lines decreased our variability, and being able to have aseptic seeds precluded the metabolism of these conjugates by any other organism except for the seeds themselves. And so we then placed these germinating seeds onto vertical plates, like Arabidopsis people do, so that we could actually watch the growth of the roots. So the first thing we needed to show was that these compounds actually get into these seedlings, and here you can see that indeed they do. Here's IAA aspartate and IAA glutamate from those seedlings. And then I'm showing this slide to show you that by simply adding some deuterated internal standard, at the same time we're measuring the IAA that's released from the conjugates that we feed them, we can measure the endogenous IAA levels. So what this allowed us to do is this very simple graph after a lot of work shows that there is hydrolysis of these conjugates in these seedlings. So here you see IAA aspartate and the amount of IAA released from IAA aspartate and IAA glutamate. What was interesting to see, though, was when you looked at the endogenous levels of IAA, you see that the IAA released from IAA glutamate affects the endogenous levels differently than the IAA released from the IAA aspartate. So how can that be? And the only way that we can think about this is to think that perhaps there's compartmentalization of these two reactions. And that leaves us with a lot to think about how conjugates are hydrolyzed and why we have so many genes for hydrolysis. The other thing that's interesting about this is that in Arabidopsis, it's been proposed that these two conjugates act as in the degradation pathway, that they're not hydrolyzed to release IAA for growth, that they're simply made as part of the degradation pathway. And I think this either strawberry is very, very different from Arabidopsis, or maybe we need to go back and think and look again at the strawberry, at the Arabidopsis data. So we do know from the literature, and this is literature on the diploid, and this is literature on the octoploid, that there are genes for hydrolyzing these compounds in seedlings here, and these genes are expressed in developing pith and cortex of the receptacle. They're expressed in the embryo. And in the octoploid, they're also expressed in developing achenes and receptacles. But it's pretty clear from these heat maps that the expression patterns are very different between the octoploids and the diploids. And maybe this explains why we see different patterns of accumulation of the different types of conjugates in these species. So with that, I'll stop and take any questions. And thank you.